Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we had a little week off,
yeah.
But you know, it's cool because Adam got to catch up on some things, and I was just looking at my Letterboxd diary because I was like, man, I've seen a lot since the last time we recorded.
Yeah,
I've seen seven movies in the last 8 days. Which is a lot for me.
That is a lot for Logan. You guys don't understand, like a film every day, or a little
nine,
bit over.
Sorry, 9 days, not 8 days. It's 9 days, but still, because if you're counting today, and actually, we're going to see the Keanu Reeves movie,
Good Fortune.
Yeah, we're going to see Good Fortune this afternoon, so it will be. Nine movies. So
that's crazy.
8 movies. So and that's not including all of the TV I've watched, because I started just in an effort to tune out the noise at work, I've started like putting one of my AirPods in,
mm-hmm.
because it's just been, I think I'm too people that we were just kind of sort of having this conversation,
yes.
before we started recording. A year ago, I wasn't dating it or living with anybody except my dog. I didn't really see people on the weekend. Like, I would go out and do stuff, but I wasn't like really hanging out with anybody on a regular basis. Like, cause everybody's got their lives, you know?
Yeah.
Like, would see people every once in a while, my friends and whatnot. So, it was a lot of just me by myself. So I got my like people interaction at work. So like by the end of the work week, I was just like, yeah, it's cool. I don't need to see anybody. But like now I live with someone. So like there's constantly a person there. This, and it's not a negative, not anything against any people. It's just, yeah. I am an introvert. So there's constantly someone where I live. And then I go to work, and there's constantly people. So I'm constantly with people. So I went from being like an introvert who like is legit an introvert to like for the last 9 months, there's just always, well, especially the last few months, because we moved in together.
Yeah.
There's just always someone there. The only alone time I have is in my car. And that's usually me being angry at the people who are also on the road, because that's just who I am. So, the point being that, like, to tune out the noise at work, instead of listening to music, I've just started putting an AirPod in and pressing play on a show that maybe I'm not going to be, like, fully invested in, and it's just, you know,
yeah.
the background. So, in the last 2 weeks, what I've wound up doing is binging all of the Dexter stuff, which...
Nice.
You talked about Resurrection and told yes. me I should just jump to that. I will say that was good advice. And if anybody wants to start back with Dexter, take Adam's advice. Just jump to Resurrection. It'll clue you in on everything you need to
that
know.
That you need to know. Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because we actually went back and watched New Blood, and we were like, oh, God, this is so not Resurrection.
Here's the thing, though.
Uh-huh.
I did watch New Blood, but then I jumped into the prequel series, Dexter...
Oh, the Dexter, the early years, the college years. I can't remember what it was called.
What's it called?
No, it's not Next Generation. I can't. Oh God. Man, there's so many Dexter series that they tried to like,
right.
Original Sin. Original Sin.
There you go.
Yeah.
I watched all of that. And we had talked about like, I had watched the first episode or two when it first premiered. Yeah. I was like, yeah, don't watch this show. Yeah, absolutely don't watch this show. New Blood is better than Original Sin by a mile. Like, it is so rough. I wound up really enjoying the last like couple of episodes of New Blood, like the big reveal of like kind of like who the killer actually was. And it would have been a little more fun than I thought it was going to be. But much like the original Dexter, the ending was just like, huh, okay. But Resurrection, I still don't. So I'm going to qualify it and say, I still don't think this is a great show, but I guess Dexter never was truly great. But Resurrection is incredibly fun.
Yeah, right?
Like, and like it's just, it made me feel like when I was watching, like, you know, those early seasons of Dexter, like those first few years where I'm like, oh, this is fun. I was surprised how well they were able to handle the Harrison stuff, because I don't think it was handled well at all in New Blood.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Like, we got four episodes in, and I looked at her and I was like, how did they write Harrison so differently in Resurrection? Even though it's the same kind of tone, it just, it's, like you said, it's handled differently. And we just turned it off because he was the, for me, he was the inflection point that really bothered me. Like, it was, it was that, and then it was the fact that what makes Dexter Dexter is Harry and the flashbacks, and they found a way around the flashbacks because there have been too many flashbacks, right? But they found, I think that, like, having him as his conscience, as his Jiminy Cricket, is like, it's not a brilliant stroke, but it's just a smart enough one to, like, recontextualize Dexter again and make it what Dexter actually is for me, which is, like, it is that whole thing. Like, it's not only just the cat and mouse, because like the whole Angel thing was great, because he takes the place of so many other cops that have been on his trail. But it also is like you have Harry again. And I feel like Harry's Harry's a huge part of it. As much as Dexter is the show, Harry is the show too.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And it's really inventive in the way it uses the stuff that previously happened that maybe they wouldn't have otherwise wanted to even deal with.
Absolutely.
Like, well, we were saddled with this continuity, so we have to find a way to kind of rationalize all of these things. And then they bring in just a smorgasbord.
Oh my god!
Stars for the season, which, you know, I'd already read about almost all of them.
Yeah,
and then you kind of were like, yeah, they're all great, and they are. They're all great. Like, Neil Patrick Harris is not in it very long.
No,
but he's incredibly fun. There is one reveal about 3/4 of the way through the season with David Dasmalchian.
Yes.
That is fucking incredible.
Right?
Like, it's so fun.
But
that when it happens, it's just like, wait, what? Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. And like, in the show even tells you, like, this makes perfect sense. You should have realized this.
Well, yeah. Like, you go, oh, now everything makes sense why he's the person that he is, right?
Yeah.
And I won't reveal anything more than that, because it was one of the better reveals.
It was a lot of fun. It's a fun reveal, but it's also impactful in the way that like the Trinity Killer reveal kind of was.
Yes.
It makes me a little happy that this show has been successful enough that, and that the powers that be see that and go like, oh no, instead of doing the Marvel thing of like, we're going to spread it out and create this whole universe and move forward on this spinoff and that spinoff. And they looked at it and go, no, this thing is really successful. We're going to put all our energy into making sure that this stays successful.
Yeah, this stays quality. And maybe so even
up it. Shut down the prequel series. They shut down the development of the Trinity Killer prequel. You know, not to say that that stuff won't come up again in the future, but, you know, recognizing that, it kind of gives me hope for, like, some television stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's just like, yeah, okay, good. You recognize the quality and are deciding to reward that by just continuing on with that, not going like, oh, you really like this? Here's a bunch more of this, and we're going to spread ourselves thin and ruin, you know, everything.
Yeah, so. like what everybody has told me that happened with Yellowstone is that he spread himself too thin. And, like, you know, he had too many shows, and he should have just concentrated on the one unruly show, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is, like, more like you said, like, they decided to, like, go internally. Like, they decided to, like, move forward, like, with just consolidating everything and going, okay, let's do this. Like, let's not make a big universe out of it. There's a big enough, well, like, that's the crazy part, is that there's a big enough universe that there's a big enough universe in this that you don't need to do anything else. Like, you just stay in this because, like, there's so many new cast members and there's so many, like,
putting him in New York is, it seems so obvious.
Yeah.
But it just becomes a stroke of genius. And of course he can just disappear in New York.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's where you go to just disappear. Nobody in that city gives a shit about you. Like, he found the one person in New York that might care about somebody, you know. that becomes, like, a really, really interesting thing. His, like, newfound family, it's such a well done show. Like I said, I hesitate to call it a really good show because it's not going to change your life. There's no real impactful anything, but Dexter was never that show. It's just like, oh, this is fun. And it is. It's a lot of fun.
Yep. Well, have you heard about some of the people that might be playing people in the next
after seeing, like, Eric Stone Street and Neil Patrick Harris and David Dastmalchian and who was the other one?
Eric Stone Street.
Yeah, Eric Stone Street. I thought there was one more.
Oh, let's see. Neil Patrick Harris, Christian Ritter.
Christian Ritter. That's Christian Ritter. I didn't say Christian Ritter. After seeing, like, them have so much fun. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, if you did watch this, you see that and you're like, I want to be a serial killer that Dexter kills. You know, like, if you have that kind of, like, weight where it's like, hey, can you get me just a meeting with these guys, like, and have them pitch me as a serial killer or something? I can't imagine who the guest list is.
Do you want to hear the rumor? Like, okay, so, so Clyde Phillips, the guy who's the showrunner, dropped a picture. And so if it's to be believed, it is Vincent D'Onofrio, Christine Milioti, Eric Stone Street is coming back, of course, Jesse Plemons, Paul Dano, and Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah, I could see all those people having a really, really good time on this show.
Yeah, like, literally, like, and supposedly Vincent D'Onofrio as the New York Ripper.
They tease a lot in season one.
Yes.
That brings me to another point I wanted to make is, okay, I did have a lot of fun early in Dexter with his fellow police officer, like, friends, more or less. But, like, they kind of started to really just wear thin. Mainly because, like, how incompetent are these people?
Yes, exactly.
It becomes just, like, I don't like any of them because either they're so overconfident that it's annoying or they're so incompetent because they can't figure... They make them seem really, really dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of flip that on its head with this season, introducing these other two New York detectives, one of which who is this, like, autistic savant.
Yeah, very she's neurodivergent. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, monk. Like, that's great. That's a great comp. Like, she's, like...
She is, like, Adrian Monk without the... Like, it's not even unintentional comedy. Like, yeah. Every time something is awkward, they don't try to play the comedic beat. They just sit in the awkwardness for like 30 seconds. And she's just like, yeah, this is awkward.
And her use of the Bee Gees, like their use...
It's fucking great.
Yes.
It would be easy to be like, okay, she's a big fan of the Bee Gees. And you're like, shit, then we got to shell out all this money for these Bee Gees songs so we can have different songs in every episode. What if we just shell out the money for one fucking song and that's her song? Because yeah. She's neurodivergent and, like, that's the thing that she needs to get. And the use of it and the payoff at the end is... so clever that it goes from like, oh, that's cute to like, oh shit, that's kind of annoying. I'm gonna have to listen to Staying Alive like once every fucking episode on Dexter. And then, like, after the third or fourth time, you're just like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like, I kind of get it. And then they pay it off at that ball at the end. And I was just like, this is really cute and smart and fun. And I really, really dug it.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that you did because like we did too. And like, just the fact that they're getting a second seat, like it got back. Like, I think that you put, you really put a nail in it, which was, is that they brought it back to the fun of the first couple of seasons because it's a new, it's like, I think also part of what, like, New Blood, like, what really bothered me was that it wasn't a city. Like, he's like a hunter in a city.
Yeah, it's such a small little town.
Yeah.
Like, that's another part of New Blood. Like, you have to make the cops, like, basically Andy and Barney.
Yeah.
From fucking Mayberry.
Exactly.
Because clearly when shit starts going sideways, it's like, oh, I've known all of these people for all of my life. Why the fuck? Like, it's not them. It's probably the guy that's lived here who we know nothing about, who moved here, you know, a year ago. Or
yeah.
I forget how long. I think it's supposed to be a couple of years he's lived there. But still, it's like, maybe we should investigate the new guy. And especially when, like, this kid turns up that we didn't know he had. And, like, seems like that's something that would have come up in the conversation. Just all that, like, New Blood really felt like a paycheck show. And I'm not going to fault him for that. Like, yeah, man, like, this is your most successful thing, and it will definitely get you paid. So, like, we've been away from Dexter for a couple of years. They want to redo it. Okay, I'll sign up, do one season, check it, you know, because I think they obviously had the idea of, like, oh, this will end Dexter and launch into, like, Harrison's stuff, and it didn't land with Dexter fans.
Yeah.
It didn't, you know, light up any kind of ratings, and people were really, really disappointed in the ending. So... it was like, oh, well, shit, how do we bring it back? Oh, we reboot it with young Dexter. That, I mean, it worked enough that they were going to give it another season, But then I guess they came up with, also came up with this idea of how to bring him back this way. And it just works. It really, really works. So,
yeah. I like I said, I'm very glad that you really enjoyed it, because it's a hell of a show. It's a lot of fun, and it's something that you can binge very quickly. It's like, it's 10 episodes. Like, we got in around 7 episodes in, and we were kind of like, oh, we'll see. By the end of the first episode, you're like, it's bingeable. Like, you're just like, okay, let's do this. Like, speaking of City and the Hunters, I wanted to check in with you because you're doing a rewatch of a film series, and you watched one of my deep fried classic favorite movies. It's an LA movie. And somebody's it in headcanon to me, like, and I think I told you this in headcanon, it's actually the Lethal Weapon movie that should have been. That should have been Lethal Weapon 3. Like, Riggs should have died after the 18 bullets that he took, and then Murtaugh went crazy and became Riggs, but in LA in 1997, like the deep fried classic Predator 2. And I just kind of want to know what your thoughts were after seeing it after, like, I don't know how many years it's been since you've seen it.
It's been a couple of years, because I did write something on it a few years ago. I love Predator 2. I have a fondness for Predator 2. I don't think it's a better movie than the first Predator movie, but it is one that I like more. I think it's just fun. Like, there's no... You got to sit with this movie. It takes the first Predator a while to get to the point of, like, oh shit, it's an alien and all of this stuff. Predator 2 kind of just throws you in the middle. I mean, it opens with a big action set piece.
Yes, it really does.
I love Predator 2. I think Predator kills in Predator 2 are probably some of my favorite, if not just out and out my favorite. The weapons are just badass.
Yeah, they and are.
It gets so much more ridiculous when you get to, because we also watch Predators.
Yeah, the plural.
The third film. If you don't count Alien versus Predators, if you do count those as part of the Predator franchise, I guess it's the fifth film.
Yeah. Because
I think it came after the second Alien versus Predator. So I also really, really like Predators.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of goes back to the first movie where it's like, oh, we're just going to spend a lot of time with this group of people. And you don't get to see... I mean, you don't see a ton of the Predator in the second one, but you're seeing a lot of what the Predator's doing.
Yes. And
I think Predator's biggest mistake is that it makes the Predators seem incompetent. Like, are they just playing with their food, or are they not able to track them? Because that feels weird that they're not able to track them.
So I'm gonna bring something to you. Okay, does it, like, okay, so, like, here's the thing, and I think that Robert Rodriguez and the producers of Predators and the writers really have Trachtenberg to thank for this. Is this a case where this is a planet that the Predators use to have younger Predators, or like
kind of prove themselves?
Proving grounds, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought when I had watched Killer of Killers, and then I saw the trailer for Predator Badlands, or Badlands Predator, I was like, you know what? Maybe this retroactively makes Predators, like, a little bit better of a movie with the world building, because maybe these Predators aren't the best.
Some stuff does get thrown in there, like there's two tribes of predators on this planet. Like, we know there's a ship and two different predators control the ship because one starts it and then another one blows it up.
Oh, okay.
They were against each other. Because you remember, like, Adrian Brody saves the one predator.
Yes, he does. I do remember that.
And he tells him, he's like, I want to get off this planet. So the predator, like, shows him the map, shows him Earth, and then starts the ship and uncloaks it. And so Adrian Brody's going to go get on the ship. He cuts that one loose.
Yeah.
And then the one of the ones that's been chasing them with the, like, jaw, I think, the, like, bone jaw on his mask.
Mm-hmm.
Those two predators fight each other. The bone jaw wins and then blows up the ship from his little handheld device. So clearly he can also control the ship. So, like, were these predators, like, also, like, exiled to this planet? And then it kind of just, like, to your point, like, became this, like, you have to go prove yourself. And whoever survives gets to come back. Like, not only against each other, but also against the things that were dropping off there. You know?
Okay.
The movie can't really explain that. That it's one of the interesting things about that we're going to see in Badlands. If you've seen the new trailer, we've never heard them speak to each other. We've never had a translation of that. And we're going to see that in Badlands. So that getting things from the perspective of the Yautja, which is, you know, what they are. Is new for cinema. So, yeah, I don't... It's going to be interesting if Dan Trachtenberg does actually retroactively make every other Predator movie better with his new movie. But I still enjoy Predators. Like, it's...
Yeah.
I haven't seen The Predator. We're going to watch that probably not this weekend, probably next weekend. So we're going to try to, I think, get through The Predator, Prey, and, maybe a rewatch of,
Killer of Killers.
Yeah. Killer of Killers next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we have time, we'll throw in, you know, the Alien versus Predator movies. So, which, it's funny. I don't have a problem with the Predator stuff in the Alien versus Predator movies. The problem I have is with the fucking Alien stuff in those movies.
Oh, the Alien and the human stuff. Like, yeah. It's so...
I'm way more precious about the Alien franchise, despite the fact that it's getting to the Star Wars levels of, like, we're at, like, 50% or less here, guys.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously, I was just like, okay, huh, interesting.
But it's been fun rewatching them. Predator 2 is still my probably favorite of the bunch, just sentimentally. Mm-hmm. None of them are as, so far, none of them are as good a movie as the first Predator movie is. It's such a well-made movie.
Yeah, no, it's nowhere near, none of them are nowhere near that movie. I mean, McTiernan was just on a tear with that, like, starting with that, then moving to, that, then going to Die Hard a year later, and then 2 years after that, The Hunt for Red October. I mean, that is an all-timer. Like, that is an all-timer, yeah. Like, run of, like, I can't even describe to people what that means action wise, because they are all three Stone Cold classics, and, like, literally you don't get any better. But anywho, I'm glad that you're enjoying it. I really am glad that you're enjoying, like, the run up to.
I remember Predators being, like, really, really shit on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. There's nothing in there that, like, there is some stuff where it's just like, okay, well, you kind of just have to roll with it. But, like, that's most movies like that. Predator 2 is a lot like that. But,
yeah.
I mean, that could also explain why there wasn't a solo Predator movie between, what, 1990 or 19? When did Predator 2 come out?
I think it was 1990.
So, yeah, like between 1990 and sometime in the 2000s when Predators came out.
Yep,
so.
November of 1990.
Yeah, 20 years without a solo Predator movie.
Yeah. So. But my favorite part is Gary Busey unhinged as Gary Busey. Oh,
it's so great. you know, you kind of wish you got more of that.
Yeah.
Because, like, what's his name is also one of the soldiers.
Adam Baldwin.
Who, I mean, he gets like 3-4 lines of dialogue, maybe.
Yeah.
But on the other side of that is like, I kind of wanted to spend more time with the cops too. Like Danny yes. Glover and his crew, like Reuben Blades. So good, man.
Yep.
And he just dies so terribly.
Well, okay, like honestly, like, but also like, why did Robert Davi like why is Robert Davi playing Robert Davi from Die Hard? Like,
I don't know. It's like, literally, we're watching it, and he comes on screen, and I looked at Steph. I was like, I don't think this guy ever played anything except an asshole.
Yeah, an asshole like cop or an asshole gangster. Like he's literally just like
it's him yeah. from the '80s. It's him and what's his name from Ghostbusters, and also Die Hard.
Yeah, William Atherton.
Yeah.
Bill Atherton.
It's just like, oh, that guy's a jerk because that's what he plays.
Yep. Like, he just, like, literally played the biggest asshole in the world. Like, and that's what you casted those both guys as. And it was, like, hilarious because they just kind of loved it. Like, Davi loved that. I mean, he was a fucking Bond villain. Like that's, like, and what people forget was that, you know, he was in one of the two Dalton movies, just like Benicio del Toro was playing a drug dealer, which was so fucking hilarious. License to Kill is not a good movie. though his first movie, what's the first one, is actually pretty good. Like, I was genuinely surprised. Like, I went back to it a few years ago, and I need to go back to it again because I need to finish up my.
Which one? Steph is a big giant Bond fan, so.
Ah.
It's a whole thing. She loves to. They're on. I think they're on like Tubi or something.
They're on Prime, actually. I think.
Prime. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew they're on something because every once in a while, like I'll walk in the room, or like I'll sleep in a little bit, and I'll wake up, and she'll be sitting on the couch playing video games and watching James Bond. So,
I mean, there's 25 films, or there's 20 films, or something like that. Actually, I started a. I started a rewatch of Bond this year that I've got to get back to, because it had been a while, like it had been a long while since I'd seen some of these movies, and it was very interesting to go back to them because they are so, like, the best part about them is that they're so un-PC, but they're un-PC for the time. So, like, License to Kill, for example, is like the most, it's like the most drug dealer drug deal that ever drug dealed in the James Bond universe, right?
Yeah, because that, like, that was the thing. It was like you had Miami Vice was like,
yep.
We were like either like coming just off peak Miami Vice or like right in that era. So everything was like, oh, we got to do drug cartels. And it's got to be, everybody's got to be wearing like, suits and just slicked hair, and it's gotta feel like that because that was such a big thing. That was everything was drug cartels.
Yeah, and like then his other one, Living Daylights, Dalton's other one, which I really appreciate and I like. It's the most Russian movie that ever did Russia, because even more than From Russia with Love, which is a pretty Russian Russia movie. But it's like, it's just funny how like the mores of the time and the unpolitical correctness are very on screen. Like they have, like there's this one that's set in mostly Japan, and you know, all of those inappropriate jokes in Austin Powers are literally word for word from those fucking movies, from that fucking movie. Like rewatching it this year because I had also watched, like, I also love the Austin Powers movies. I like the first one more than anything else. watching, I was like, holy shit, they literally, like Myers didn't do anything other than steal directly from them. But they are amazing. Like I will give you that, that, like, they are, like, big budget in a way that aren't big budget anymore. Like going to locales, like actually going to India and filming in India, like underwater photography, actually being, other than James Cameron, right? Being underwater photography. It's kind of great. And you gotta love Bond. I mean, you know, like, whoever your favorite Bond is, you gotta love them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know what? I've never asked that. Who is your favorite Bond?
I mean, it's probably, I was going to say, it's not Daniel Craig. Because I didn't even watch all the Daniel Craig movies. I still haven't seen the last one.
Oh, the 5-hour one? I've got, like, I, you know, I'm mainly doing this rewatch so that I could get to the Bond. Because his Casino Royale is my favorite James Bond movie, but also, like, Time to Die, man, I could not get into it. It felt like it was 5 hours long. I mean, it's 2 hours and 47 minutes. It's almost 3 hours. Like, that's a trudge. But anywho,
Pierce Brosnan, but, like, it's one of those things where, like, most of those movies aren't good.
No, they're not. You know? But, I mean, but, you, like, know,
GoldenEye was a lot of fun, and I probably would say Pierce Brosnan,
yeah,
because of the video game. Because I played so much fucking GoldenEye.
So much GoldenEye. That was a very formative game for me. I will say this, like, it's Connery for me, and then, like, it's Connery and Brosnan, right? But Brosnan doesn't, like, here's the shocking part. Connery's movies are super, like they're so un-PC that you just don't know what to do with them. Like, you, like, he is, like, even he is troubling in those movies, right? Like, that's the wild part to me about those, what, rewatching them, is that I'm like, yeah, Bond, he was my Bond, because, like, that's what my dad showed me him first, and then he tried to get me into Roger Moore, who was his Bond, like his second place Bond. Nah, man, Roger Moore is a fucking...
It's so funny because, like, this is the second time this week I've had a conversation, not with Stephanie, about James Bond, because somebody brought it up at work the other day. One of my coworkers, also a big Bond fan, and in our little cubicle set, they started talking about their Bonds, and the two of them, both, one guy, Wayne, he was like, I still don't understand what anybody sees in Roger Moore's James Bond. And my other coworker, Katie, was like, yeah, right? Those are not good movies. And I was just like, kind of holding my tongue. I was like, guys, most of those movies aren't good movies. But
right? I mean, like...
I mean, if you enjoy them, you enjoy them, fine. I'm not knocking it. But I just, like, I don't know. Like, a lot of those, I watch... I can put on a scene and Steph will be like, oh, this is from Russia with Love. Or, yeah. But like me, if you put on a James Bond scene, I could tell you who the actor playing Bond is, but I just be like, I don't know what movie this is, man. Like, I don't know. If he says I'm on a top of things, I know that's GoldenEye.
Yes, exactly.
Like, the one fucking thing I remember from a James Bond movie is her name is Xenia on a top. Like, what a stupid name.
That and Christmas Jones. Christmas Jones, comes one fucking I want to punch the writer that came up
with so bad
Christmas comes once a year. You shut the fuck up. Speaking of games, I'm actually playing, like, what is probably the best game I've played in, like, 4 years. So, and the last game is actually the original. So, like, I don't know if I've ever told you this.
The Ghost game?
Yeah. Ghost of Tsushima is probably one of my favorite games of all time, right? Like, literally, the ending made me cry. Like,
I've seen this trailer for this new game so many times.
So, I, like, of course, I picked up Ghost of Yote, and I've been playing it, and, like, I'm 20 hours in to it in a game that's probably just like Ghost of Tsushima is going to be about 100 to 120 hour game, because I'm gonna go 100 with it, like I did with Ghost of Tsushima. It's just, it's one of those things that I do. But I'm gonna make an analogy here to make people want to play this. PS has finally found their equivalent to Zelda. This is like literally the, like, I want another seven of these games, because like this is literally the Legend of Zelda for the PlayStation set. Like, completely different, but also very similar. It's kind of contact to nature. It's semi-spiritual, like spiritual, like subplots. The way that hunting and other side quests, bounty hunting, like there's all these sets of side quests that you can go on and choose to do. The way you level up, it's very much like a companion piece to Zelda. And I'm just gonna say, like, it's like one of the, like, the things that I find annoying in the new Zelda games are not present in this game, but it has a similar mechanic and a similar kind of design. It's very much like the, like, I know a lot of people compare the Zelda games now to, what's his name? God, he's one of my favorite animation directors. What's his name? The guy who did, Spirited Away.
Oh yeah,
I can't even think of his name now. Like, I'm like, why is my head drawing a blank? Oh good lord. And he's like I know that they like, it's very much like that, like, right, like, it's very much like in the spirit of
Miyazaki,
there we go. Yeah. It's very much in the spirit of Miyazaki, but also like super fucking bloody. Like, there's controls that you can change it from R-rated to X-rated, and you have like limbs and blood. Oh, and wow. Guts. There's a Kurosawa, like they call it the Kurosawa setting, where if you flip a switch, it turns into widescreen black and white in Japanese with subtitles, and you can switch it on and off wherever you want to. And I've tried it out, and I'm like, okay, this is super fucking cool, but so not for me, because part of gaming is not, like, I have the subtitles on, but it's just because I need this, like, I like having the subtitles on, right?
Yeah.
But gaming is not about reading subtitles for me. It's the experiential thing, right? So, but this game is impressive in a way that I have not been impressed by a game recently. And I've played some pretty big games. Like, this... Like, I was reading up. I was like, how far am I into the map? Because I thought I was pretty far, but then I realized I'm 5% of the game completed. But also, like, the map, I was reading, and the map is, like, three times the map size that the first Ghosts game was. So I'm not even close. Like, I may be 10 or 15% of the map covered. So yeah, like it's like, I definitely recommend for anybody who's looking for a game that you can just lose yourself into.
So not me.
no, I don't know. Like, yeah, that's the kind of thing where it's like, you will get obsessive. I'm such a
casual gamer that, yeah, like, I don't want to, you know, I absolutely, we've talked about this, have the ability to lose myself, but it is so bad that it's like, I wind up losing my job because I'm like, oh, guys, I'm going to take my Switch to work. And like, I can't play on Switch, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm losing sleep, like falling asleep at my desk because I literally came home and booted up this game and played for 3 or 4 hours before I went to bed. Just stuff like that. I'm like, I can't play games like that. So I am, since we're talking about games, I'm kind of in a holding pattern, because ever since they showed that I was going to, so many games, I'm like, I'm going to start playing that.
Yeah.
And then a couple of weeks ago, they dropped the trailer and the announcement for the new Lego Batman game, and I'm like,
yes,
this is the only game I want to play.
Oh man. And it's going to be for the Switch too.
Yeah.
So you'll have to upgrade your Switch, yeah, unfortunately. Though they're very available right now. I was going to ask, I know that you're a huge Mario fan, so like, and you've not played these games, but you're not going to get the two pack from Nintendo of Galaxy and Galaxy.
May at some point.
Okay.
Because I haven't played them, they would be nice to play at some point.
Yeah.
I've heard very mixed things about the Switch controls.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because Galaxy was such a like motion control game. And I know the Switch has that, but it's not as... because a lot of people play the Switch. Yeah. Because a lot of people play their Switches handheld.
Yep.
So it becomes a bug instead of a feature.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've heard some very mixed things. I may get it just to have it and, mm-hmm, you know, fall back on it at some point. Right now I was so like excited about the Lego stuff, that I've had Lego Horizon for a while, even though Horizon is not my thing. Picked it up because I got it cheap and it's a Lego game. That I was just like, I want to play a Lego game. I haven't finished I started Horizon forever ago and just never went back to it. So booted it up, started playing it. It's an extremely short game.
Oh,
okay.
Is it meant to be played online? Is it meant to be like an online component? Like the online component is bigger?
I don't know.
Because
there's definitely some like two player stuff that expands it a little bit. Uh-huh. Which I guess the old Lego games are like this too, but it's more of a like the value is in or the length of gameplay comes from, oh, I had to replay these levels a couple of times to 100% this game. Rather than like, oh, here's some more quests. Here's some more side quests. It's the main story. I mean, you could do it in probably a day.
So it was kind of like Battlefront, because like the thing that annoyed me about Battlefront, like I bought Battlefront 2 and I bought it for like $10 or something. Like it was literally super cheap, and it's why I bought it, was that the main quest, the main story that you're playing is only like 15 to 20 hours. And then when I was reading online is that most people, like the reason why they get the game is the online component, but also the replayability of different levels to get to 100%, because it requires different characters. Like it requires a Jedi character to get this thing, and a trooper to get this thing, and an Imperial officer to do this. And so like, there's a big competitive getting up to 100, which I'm just not a dude. Like I know that I just said like Ghost of Yote that I'm going to go 100% on, but that's a different kind of 100%, right? Like that's going in, like this is
not a replay 100%, more exactly. I've explored this game to the absolute lengths that it can be explored. So Lego Horizon that has, these little side quests that get you gold bricks.
Uh-huh.
And several of them are literally like, change into this specific outfit and beat this set of levels three times. So you have to play the level three times to get this gold brick. I'm like,
Yeah, that's like kids stuff. Like that's like, it's designed for kids. Like, you know, kids are like,
it's a Lego game. So yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
But this just seems like such a cheap way of like, instead of expanding something in the game, you're just like, no, play the level three times.
Yeah. Well, it's not as clever as the Star Wars.
Not even three different difficulties, just three times.
Jesus. It's kind of like it's not as clever as the Star Wars game or the Star Wars Lego game, where you go to different planets and you play different levels, but you play them like kind of like Battlefront, where you play them as different characters, but you can get different things to build the to build your gold bricks and build the world and build and get extra characters because you're doing that. Which I like, that's something that I don't mind doing. I kind of loved it in Star Wars, in the Star Wars Lego game. Like, I'll still go back to that and occasionally play that just as a refresher, if you know what I mean. Like, because it's fun. It's a lot of fun to play that game. But yeah, I could see that being just a little annoying. A little annoying. So
yeah. All right, so let's talk about some more movies.
Yes.
There's so much more I've watched. See, you have not seen Smashing Machine, right?
And no, I did not. I'm planning on seeing it, but I've not seen it. We've talked about it briefly, but why don't you give us the
just solid performances in a boring ass movie, man. Like, it's so high on the Safdies.
Yeah.
And so this is like one of, I remember, like, it's come up and like, oh, okay, I can't wait to see what they do. And yeah, like, this is just so disappointing at how boring the movie is, because I really think The Rock or Dwayne Johnson, whatever, mm-hmm, I think he's maybe giving the best performance of his career. And it's in a movie that, so you talk about hangout movies all the time, movies you can put on. This almost has that, except it's just not a good time.
Oh man. It's excessively lingering in the bad parts of somebody's life.
Exactly that. So, like, everything, it's very slow moving, very, I would say intentionally paced, but it's just so slow. Mm-hmm. And you're hanging out in the worst moments of this dude's life. And it's just not fun. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, a kind of Kevin Smith style movie that's just like, oh, it's just people hanging out and talking, like, yeah, but it's also fun. listening to the two people yell at each other for 20 minutes.
Like, I don't need to sit there and relive my parents' divorce, like my parents' pre-divorce years. Like, it seems like that's what it's about. Like, that definitely seems like a Safdie thing. Like, I'm going to be honest with you, like, early Safdie movies are very much like that, are very much about, like, people and their shitty behavior and lingering in it. I'll probably wait for this one at home. It does not shock me then that, like, it was just recent, like, out of nowhere, like, I don't know if you heard this, but Jumanji 4 is, like, going into production, like, literally in 2 weeks. Like, they already, they got the green light. Everybody's coming back. There are a few cast members that they haven't really announced, but they're going to be big announcements, which has me thinking.
Him and Emily Blunt have a lot of chemistry in this movie. Like, probably more than they do in the
Jungle Cruise movies.
Yeah. The stuff they've done that isn't this, but,
you watch them on interviews and you go, yeah, you know what? In another world, you two would be together, not you and Krasinski. Because I just don't see it with Krasinski.
It's the thing where, like, you know, one thing that's driving him to, like, be so, you know, buff and tough now.
Yeah.
But, like, you can see her chemistry with The Rock, but it's the thing where it's like, no. What really, for lack of a better term, gets her going is funny. That's what gets her.
Yeah.
Somebody who's funny. Not the super charismatic, hunky, good looking, nice guy. But the funny kind of good looking, nice guy. That's what gets her. So, which, you know, good for her. I mean, she's got The Rock and John Krasinski. Who the hell wouldn't be happy with that? The Rock is your work wife, and John Krasinski is the dude you're going home to. Who wouldn't be happy about that?
That is definitely a 6-7 like situation, as the kids say nowadays. For like 2 seconds.
I'm really, really interested when you do finally get to this. It's probably good that you're just going to be able to sit at home and watch it, because there's definitely going to be times where, you know, you're going to be like, God, I could be doing so much other stuff. I feel like, you know,
yeah.
It sucks because this year the award bait movies are like not doing well for me this year. And I'm almost to a point, I told Steph yesterday, where it's like, if I watch a trailer and it looks like, oh, this is a movie designed to like get someone an award, I'm just out immediately.
Yeah.
Like, I would rather see something like just taking swings and failing than another awards bait. I know everybody liked One Battle After Another. We talked about it, but yeah. Just like, well, not everybody. I've actually seen some pretty prominent film voices step forward and go, guys, this is not a good movie, which made me feel a lot better. I'm really interested in what you hear. Hopefully you can catch up with it before the end of the year. So, yeah,
I should be able to.
So hopefully we're going to get to have an in-depth discussion about the Black Phone 2. Because you're planning on catching it in the next week.
Yes.
So definitely. I'm not going to say a lot. I hadn't seen The Black Phone. So we watched The Black Phone.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk more about this when you've seen The Black Phone too. But I do just want to bring up, everybody told me how good The Black Phone was. Horror is not really my thing. I noped on The Black Phone initially. Watched it with Steph because she liked it. I think she had seen it before. Shit, okay. I don't remember now. Either way, I didn't like The Black Phone.
Yeah, that's what I saw in your review. I was like, oh man, I really liked it. I also liked the short story it came from, which was very different.
Did not know it was based on a Joe Hill story until I watched it. Reading some behind the scenes stuff of like, because part of my problem is I don't understand what the fuck this movie was about. I don't understand why the girl has the dreams. I don't understand why he can hear the phone ringing. I don't understand why Ethan. And to be fair, the movie does not make any effort to explain those things to you.
No.
It's just like, oh, here's this story, which I can kind of appreciate, but it all feels so just slapdash thrown together to me. And it's not a badly made movie. It's not a badly acted movie. It's should be something that I mostly enjoyed. But I say all that to come back around and say this, not to get you too much like, oh shit, this is going to be incredible. This is exactly the conversation that we had when credits rolled on Black Phone 2 as we sat in the theater yesterday. Steph said, what did you think? I said, I really liked it. And then I said, has there ever been a sequel in the history of cinema that retroactively made the first movie so much fucking better?
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Her response was, yeah, The Godfather Part 2.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious.
Yeah, to be fair, the first Godfather was already a good movie.
Oh, and man.
Then she said, yeah, but then you had The Godfather 3. And I was, well, I, yeah. Well, then I said, so The Black Phone 2 is The Godfather Part 2 of horror movies. Uh-huh. And then she said, yeah, but then you had Godfather Part 3. I was like, oh, so the Black Phone 3 is going to ruin this entire fucking thing. hopefully not.
Yeah.
But not to get your hopes too high. Because okay. I still have some issues with Black Phone 2. It's... I think you can really... You should only watch these movies together.
That's interesting.
Absolutely watch these movies together. And it's funny because there's definitely a time jump. Because this one is set in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, that's what that's what I had seen from like reviews and stuff, was that this one's very resoundingly in the 80s. It's like 84 or something like that. It's like a very... Yeah. Like... It's leaning into, like, if you know anything about Cargill, it was like, this is a Cargill written script. Like, it leans into all of the isms that Cargill loves. Yeah. Because, like he's the writing partner of Scott Derrickson. Dude.
They crib from the two biggest horror franchises of the 80s. There's definitely Friday the 13th stuff in here. And there's definitely Nightmare on Elm Street stuff in here.
Well, as soon as I saw that they were at a camp, like they were at some kind of camp, I was like, oh, and then the nightmares. And I'm like, oh, damn. Like they're definitely going like, yeah, it made me want to see it even more because I was like, you have Ethan Hawke essentially being both fucking Freddy and Jason. Okay.
Here's the really fun thing. Uh-huh. And I don't think this is going to spoil anything, but it's also Back to the Future Part 2, where you go kind of back into the first movie and reframe so much shit. Like, it gives you context that you did not fucking have.
Uh-huh.
And like I said, it retroactively makes the first movie better. We'll talk about it. That's all I'm going to say. We'll talk about it more when you watched it, because I feel like I'm going to wind up ruining something.
Okay.
And I was not excited to go see this after watching the first movie. I was like, oh my God, if it's more of this, it's like, how can he talk to dead people? Why does this girl have these dreams? Why the fuck is he killing these kids? Like, what? There's no context for any of this. And that's supposed to be scary, I guess, but it just left me confused and whatever. But yeah, it's really good. I mean, I don't think it's brilliant, but it's really, really good.
Okay.
And so I'm excited for you to see it.
All right. Speaking of sequels, did I tell you that we finally watched Megan 2?
What did you think?
So we saw the director's
cut. Terminator 2 fucking horror movies.
we saw the director's cut, which had a lot more violence in it from what I understood, because it's not PG-13. Also, the movie stole very liberally from Sneakers and the finale of Sneakers, but also here's the thing that bothered me was that I instantly called I loved the Steven Seagal-ness of it all. Like, that was great.
Yeah.
I love Megan and how catty and bitchy she is, but the thing was that the bad guy, I called it within 2 minutes of seeing him.
Yeah, it's there's no surprises.
But they act like it's a fucking surprise. They act like it's a fucking surprise. And I'm like, no, it's not. So it was a lot of fun. I still prefer the first one, I think, because it's more of a horror film. And this one is definitely, like you said, it's T2. It's an action movie.
Well, it's not only is it like, oh, Megan's the good guy this time, but it's also like, no, we made this first movie. There's definitely like horror elements of it, you know? And then we made the second movie, which is just this big action movie.
Yeah. Like,
it's a completely different genre of movie. And I mean, we probably don't have to worry about a Megan 3 because it absolutely flopped. To my point, like with all of that, with it flopping, that me and Steph talked about this. Like, we probably talked about it on the pod. Why the fuck did you make this a summer movie, man?
Yeah.
This is a late January, early February movie. That's where this franchise would have lived and breathed. And you're like, oh no, everybody went to go see that first movie. We're going to drop it early summer, late spring. Nah, man, that's not where you go.
No, because like the first one that did the same thing, January. Yep. Just release it. Release it Valentine's Day weekend.
Movie had come out late January, early February, I think it would have done, maybe not what the first movie did, because the budget's much bigger.
Yeah.
But it would have done business, and instead you made it practically a summer movie and fell on your face, man.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because it's a lot of fun. You know, it's not remotely scary and not surprising at all. It's just fun, you know?
Yeah. It's very much so a fun movie. Like, it's weird because they kind of did the right decision with Black Phone, because Black Phone, the first one, came out in the summer and it was a surprise hit. Like, it was genuinely a surprise hit. It definitely made a lot of money, unexpectedly, but it was counter-programming, right? But then they did the right thing with the sequel, which is, this is definitely a horror movie that should be released in October, right? And what did they do? They released it in October, and now it's going to be, everything is predicting it to be a hit. Like, it's going to make its money, and we're going to get a Black Phone 3, right? Like, yep. Bam-a-lam. Speaking of sequels that we are not ever, ever, ever going to get another sequel for, because it didn't make any goddamn money.
I mean, the second one didn't make any money, and we got a third one.
No, actually, it broke even. This one's so losing. Okay. This one is so losing money, it's not even funny. Tron Ares. To which, I don't know, man. Like, you know what the biggest problem with Tron Ares is for me?
I heard this. This maybe not what you're going to say, but I heard this on, I think it was on the film cast.
Okay.
The biggest problem with this movie is that Jared Leto and Kick-Ass should be playing the opposite roles. They're like, they should have switched places.
Yes. So 3D printed Rock Jesus Assassin should never have existed. I'm sorry, but you know what? Jared Leto at 53, who looks like he looks like he doesn't look 53, but he has.
He still looks like he's in his 30s.
Yeah. Life comes at you fast, man. Jesus. Like, who's his plastic surgeon? Maybe him. Maybe Bradley Cooper should have asked him who his plastic surgeon was, man.
Him and Paul Rudd single-handedly, like, just being like, yeah, definitely something going on in Hollywood. They're bathing in the blood of children or something. Yes. Because how are these people 50?
Exactly. Exactly. I'm like, huh? What? Here's the thing is that, like, I was telling somebody, like, they were asking me about it because they didn't see it and they were kind of disappointed because, like, it's all gone out of the IMAX screens. And I was like, you know, these are the most expensive visual albums for band showcases.
So we went and saw it with Ezra. Ezra wanted to go see it, and so we took him. I had such a good time with the movie, but on the flip side of that, I think this is a good movie, but also it's been a week since I saw it. And there's so little I can remember about this movie.
Right.
Outside of like, man, that score was really good. And like the visuals were cool. But the same thing with Tron Legacy. Like, there's so little I could not fucking tell you the plot of that movie to save my life.
No.
If you put a gun to my head, I'm like, I think it's about his son, but I don't fucking remember.
Well, like Yeah, like, okay, so, like, I could also, like, if I never see a movie hued in red for the rest of my life, I'll be fucking happy.
There's so much red in this movie, man.
Jesus Christ.
It looks cool, but it's just like, okay, I get where you're going. It's like Tron is just like the blue, green, aqua.
Yeah.
We're just a red and black, red and black, red and black. But it's like, oh my God, so much red and black.
So much. And like, literally, like, the score, like the score and the visual, it's like a visual album. Like the Nine Inch Nails score is amazing. Like seeing it in IMAX 3D. Jesus, that was like an impressive. That was an impressive thing.
I think Dave Chen made this point on the Filmcast. Is that if you had advertised this as the new Nine Inch Nails album, like the way the Taylor Swift thing was advertised,
yes,
like this movie would have made twice the amount of money.
Yeah, just gotten okay. So, like, here's the question: why after Morbius, it's Morbin time? Do you fucking cast Jared Leto as the fucking lead?
We talked about this. Your own point. He's a producer on this movie. It got made partly because of him, and he's in it because he's a producer.
Like
that's the only reason. It's like the only reason, man.
There should be no reason why Jared Leto is producing this fucking movie. I mean,
he's got one more coming.
Like, he does?
Not Tron. One more more franchise insertion coming.
What is that? I'm afraid.
He's playing Skeletor in Masters of the Universe.
Oh, Jesus Christ. He's going to fucking, like, this is going to give him another 20 years. Literally going to give him another 20 years.
It can't really say he killed Morbius because, like, that movie was doomed to failure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't give a shit. Like, Morbius, it's Morbin time.
He failed in the DCU. He failed in the, like, all MCU offshoot.
Yeah.
He's failed at Tron. Like, this is it. Like, if Masters of the Universe is a failure, which probably will be, I mean, are we finally done with him as an actor?
Like, I hope, like, why isn't he just, like, stick with his, like, here's the thing. I understand in Dallas Buyers Club, he was good. Like, I watched that movie and I was like, wow, that's Jared Leto. Like, that's amazing. But, like, and then, like, House of Gucci, he's under so much fat makeup and a fat suit. He's like, he's amusing because Al Pacino and him play off of one another, and like literally the only reason, like, okay, so like the House of Gucci is like the reason to watch it is actually him and Al Pacino because they're feeding off of their baser instincts as actors. Like Al Pacino, if you get him in front of a bad actor, he will be a bad actor, right? And that's exactly what happens. Like Al Pacino and him do these really bad Italian accents, and it's literally like an SNL sketch, but doesn't mean that it's good. Like none of the shit that he's done in like the last 15 years is good. I don't even know if shit that he's done, like he ruins Blade Runner because he's doing things and the only thing that they could use on Harrison Ford is like stumbling. I don't know who the fuck this guy is and what he's doing.
Yeah.
Like
we're 12 years out. 13 years next year out from his Oscar win. Because he won the Oscar, right?
Yeah, for Dallas Buyers Club. Yeah.
So we're about to be 13 years out from that. And like that Oscar win bought him Suicide Squad, Blade Runner,
Morbius.
I guess you can count The Haunted Mansion from a couple of years ago in there.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
And then Tron Ares.
And also the movie that he did with Rami and Denzel, which I find, a quick story, just really quick side tangent. I've never had Scott so upset with me to hearing him and I talk about this one. Cause like he recommended this movie to me.
I didn't see The Little Things.
Okay. So. But the reason why he got so mad at me is because I sat there And when he was talking to me about it, we got on the phone, we were talking about it. I literally started laughing about the entire movie because it is like the worst cop movie of all time. And you literally have Jared Leto playing a serial killer and his entire performance and his entire like ruins the movie. And it's just, it's a bad movie. It's the first time I've ever, like, Scott has some really good taste. Our friend of the show, Scott Phillips, has some impeccable taste when it comes, especially to crime films. This movie is so bad. So bad. I mean, because it's Jared Leto.
It's written by John Lee Hancock.
Yes. Who only did one good movie. The Rookie, I will give The Rookie. I will give him The Rookie. But that's it. Everything else is just terrible. But it's literally Jared Leto talking in like this like high-pitched voice and like looking as creepy as he does. Like the entire time he looks like he does in the poster. Like that's the look he gives the entire time. And like you see Rami and Denzel just befuddled by him. The same way that Harrison Ford is befuddled by him in Blade Runner 2049. Yeah. So
go ahead. Going back to Tron though.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say something a little outrageous. I think if this movie has a little more time to breathe, like just 30 more minutes to better expand and explain on like things that are in the movie.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a better movie. Like I can see the bones of like a really, really great movie, even with Jared Leto in it. But there's so much that's just cut out or just thrown in there for seemingly no fucking reason at all. That like the permanence code stuff doesn't make any sense. It comes out of nowhere.
Yep.
Because like that's not something that's ever been mentioned. And like the idea of like, oh, you can 3D print an army is really fascinating, but it's also like people have 3D printers in their house now, so it's a little out of date.
Yeah.
You know?
For a movie, like, for a movie series that was always ahead of the curve, like,
yeah, say what it's behind now.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Like, Tron Legacy was ahead of the curve because it was talking about AI and the AI birthing things within AI. That's
the other thing. We are in the, like... Everything, especially in this country, is like AI is all we hear about. All of every company with any kind of like big finances is investing or using or going to utilize. Like, it's all like, how can we use AI? How can we use? And there's such the flip side of this, there's such a backlash from like a lot of consumers of media and products against the use of AI. Like, you have a chance to say something about that and you do nothing with that. So mostly because like you can't shoehorn it into like this plot you already had.
Yeah.
And so the movie doesn't have enough time to breathe. I think there's a lot of really interesting concepts, a lot of ideas that they barely touch on. And a lot of shit that just ultimately doesn't make sense if you think about it for more than a few minutes. Like 3D printing food. Like, yeah. That is something that has been talked about. But what you're doing is not what they're doing. You know what I mean? Like, they're talking about printing food by using, like, proteins. You're talking about doing it with a laser. You know, it's not the same thing. And so it just falls apart if you think about it. But also this movie looks incredible. It fucking sounds incredible if you see it with a good enough sound system.
Yeah.
It's an excellent music video. It's one of those like... little like lower than Avatar where it's just like, I'm going to see this on the big screen. It's going to look and sound amazing. And then a week later, I'm going to be like, oh yeah, I forgot I saw that.
But like the biggest difference is that Tron Ares has Jared Leto and fucking Avatar has fucking James Cameron, right? Like, there's no comparison. And it's just like you said, it's visually inventive, but it's very empty. It's very empty calories. Like,
yeah,
I've listened to the soundtrack for the last week. Like, it's an amazing soundtrack. I'm going to get it on vinyl, like, because it's great.
I do still think it's worth seeing, though.
Like, it is.
Despite all of the negative stuff, especially if you can see it on the big screen and it's not going to cost you, you know, if you have the disposable income, or if, even better, if you're AMC Plus,
yep,
or whatever, it's AMC, whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah, it's AMC Plus, I think.
It's just not going to cost you stubs. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just not going to cost you anything really to go see it. And like IMAX or a premium format thing. Yeah, absolutely. You should go see it. It's fun. There's some action set pieces that are not unlike anything we've ever seen. Like the seeing the light cycles in the real world, it's fucking awesome.
It is like seeing it's all of the vehicles. Awesome. Yeah. Like they definitely put the money to use. Like the $150 million budget, they put it to use. Like you know, having
that light cycle chase through the city was so freaking cool.
Yes, it was. Like it was, and it felt tactile. Like that's the thing about this movie that I will give it super credit for, is that it doesn't feel like a video game cutscene. Like everything feels tactile. Like the best scene in the movie, which is Leto and Jeff Bridges meeting, it that still feels tactile. Oh,
going back into the original Tron.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, the way they made it look, it all looks so freaking cool. The action's really, really fun. Just, you know, the plot falls apart, and Jared Leto's just not as good an actor as he seems to think he is, despite an Oscar win. But, which, you can point to, like, look at Best Supporting Oscars, man. How many of those people go on to do... Truly, not saying that they weren't great in the performances they won an Oscar for.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of supporting Oscars. Hell, there's a lot of lead Oscars. As people went on to not do much of anything.
Nope. They were politicking for things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nope.
So last movie to talk about, I guess we can end on this because I was just about to say, because I feel like we're also probably both in agreement on this, but I don't know because we actually haven't talked about Roof Man.
Yes, aka my name is Jeff. so here's the thing: is that like Derek Cinefrance does not know how to make a movie that isn't a little bit sad, but I'm not mad at it.
Oh my god. So we're probably going to be in complete agreement on Roof Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So going into Roof Man last week, Stefan, we were both really excited, but I found out we were both excited for different reasons. I like Derek Cinefrance. I haven't seen everything he's ever done, but I do like it. I've got to see the Metal movie. Sound of Metal. Is that what it's called?
Sound of Metal is not.
From a couple of years
ago? Cinefrance is not Sound of Metal, I don't think. I'm trying to think of what movie. I'm bringing up Derek Cinefrance right now to see. Like, so I know that he did Place Beyond the Pines.
Oh, he's a producer on Sound of Metal.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
That totally makes sense.
No. He did. He did Blue Valentine, Place Beyond the Pines.
Place Beyond the Pines. Light Between the Oceans is the one I haven't seen. Sorry.
That one is as sad bastard of a movie. Like, he makes literally Radiohead songs as movies. Like, that's literally what I feel like that he does. He did the twin, like, I watched his TV show, I Know This Much Is True.
I didn't watch the TV show either.
Oh, Jesus Christ, that is the saddest fucking, that is the saddest show in the world. Like, it's
Mark Ruffalo, right?
Yes. where he's playing like the two twins, and like the performance is amazing. But anywho, go ahead.
He was a producer on Sound of Metal. I had a list of like, yeah, I guess I haven't seen all his stuff, but it's only that one movie I haven't seen.
Okay.
So anyway, we'd seen the trailers, and the trailer is funny, romantic comedy, little bit of serious stuff. And I was like, we were talking about, I was like, oh, I don't think this is going to be as funny and or romantic as the trailer makes you think it is, because Derek Cianfrance makes stuff that can be funny and romantic.
Yeah.
But it's going to be sad. Yeah. And also, it's based on a true story, so that shit's always sad. So, yeah. Like, I was excited to see, I was like, oh, this is a movie where the trailer is not showing me everything.
Yes.
And I'm excited for that. And she was excited to go see this funny romantic comedy, which is not really what this movie is. It's part of that, but it's not wholly what this movie is. And we both came out, I will say, just short of thinking it's like a masterpiece.
Mm. Yeah. Like, it's, there's some, like, this is 10 minutes shy away from being a masterpiece for me. Because it's a little too long for me, just slightly. But,
I think it's long in the wrong places, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Like, you, that the extra time in the movie isn't spent, like, getting more to the, like, grittiness of, like, what's going, like, this dude dealing with his shit.
Yes.
Instead, it kind of like maybe 10 minutes too much of like the fluffiness of it.
Yes.
But yeah, it's a fucking fantastic Channing Tatum performance. I'm trying to think of like, is there a performance we've had from him where he's not, I mean, he does look good, but there's a lot of this movie where he's, schlubby's not the right word, because he's not really schlubby, but it's just, he's not a clean-cut kind of guy.
Well, like, the thing that I liked about it was that he kind of went method, because this is what would happen to a guy who just ate peanut M&Ms for 3 months inside of a, like even before then, he's like this guy who's kind of, like, kind of wiry and swoony. He's not the buff, like, muscular R&B dancing stripper that we know him as, or the, I'm going to make a name for myself, like, you know, Gambit. Like, you know, he's like a normal dude, a wiry, thin dude who you could totally, like, you watch him in the first 5 minutes, you go, of course this motherfucker steals. Of course this guy makes stupid decisions. Because, like, that's the, like, it kind of, it's almost like Channing Tatum going method and losing a bunch of weight to not make some kind of performance thing, but to make the audience believe he is this character Jeff, that he's different than other, like, there's still the smooth talking hustler, but there's a component of stupidity, but within that stupidity, it's warmth. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, he's a lovable loser. Like, it's very rare.
It's a very nuanced performance.
Yes, it is.
And I don't know that we've ever seen anything like that from Channing Tatum. Like, no. I know we've seen, like, some darker stuff and, you know, some more serious stuff. Definitely a lot of comedic stuff, a lot of action stuff. But this is, like, very nuanced. And just all around, great fucking performances. Like, every single person in this movie is just fantastic.
Yeah, they are.
You know, Peter Dinklage does something that I didn't think was possible. Maybe just for him, I don't know. But, like, he plays this guy who, like, from the jump, you don't like this guy.
Yes.
But then, like, at the end, it's very, very, like, he's able to, like, elicit this sympathy, which is baffling because it's just like, oh, and also show like care for his employees. Like with what happens at the end where he's like very clearly not just out for himself. Like he is upset that somebody there might get hurt, you know?
Yes. Well, like and there's this,
yeah, it's just great.
Yeah. There's a, like, I think you said it earlier. There's this humanity to everything in the movie. But there's also this, like, and I don't mean humanity, like, as in like the stupid thing of humanity. It's like, there's a reality to everybody. Like the Keith Stanfield character, how he keeps on, he's not a well-intentioned, oh, I'm just going to give you this for free. Like, it's like, yeah, no, motherfucker.
It's like there's a price here. Yeah. Like, we are friends. We did serve together, but like, this is also my livelihood. It's not just your way out. It's kind of like the opposite of, even though I really, really like, what's his name's performance in One Battle After Another, like as he's helping.
Leo, the Benicio. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really great, fun performance and the most enjoyable thing I think about that whole movie. But it is like, I understand why he's helping out his, like the people who are, why is he helping out this fucking white dude?
You know? Yes, exactly.
It just keeps getting, whereas like, this is the opposite of that. It's not, he's not just like, he does want to help him out, but it's like, no, like we are, like I'm with you, I'm pulling for you, but like I can't get pulled into your shit, and if I help you, you're gonna pay me.
Yeah. And I don't care about what, yeah, how much you have to pay me. You're gonna, yeah, pay me. But I liked that because it gave a sense of reality of like, no, there's no altruistic people. Like a bunch of, like, there's not gonna be a sacrificial lamb. Like you're, like, it's just like what ends up happening at the end, like where, like, he does what he does. She knows it. And like, you know, the Kirsten Dunst character, and she literally has to, like, she has no choice.
She's so,
she
great sells him. In this, man.
Oh man. Like as Lee, like when she sells him out, like you, yeah, can see that she's pained about it, but she has two fucking daughters. Like, yeah, it all makes, like, it's,
and why would she not be angry? Like, mm-hmm, I like get like the movie, the real movie Hollywood version of it is like, oh, she immediately understands and isn't angry and like just, you know, but like it goes back to like there's a conversation they have where he knows he's getting ready to get out, he's gonna have to go, and he's like, what if we just leave, what if, and she's like, this is my life.
Yeah,
like I like my life for the most part, like, and I want you in it, but I'm not just going to abandon my life because I'm having a really good time with you right now.
Exactly.
You know, and yeah, like, it's this very light but difficult conversation, which it's the kind of thing that a director like Derek C. in France is really, really good at. And like, that's where the movie shines, is in these like small little moments. Part of which is like, okay, why the fuck is Ben Mendelsohn in this movie? Like, you just offered him this part and he was like, sure, I'm down. He's in it for like 4 minutes and he's fucking great.
Yes. Him and his wife, Uzo Aduba?
Yeah, I think.
Aduba. Like, they are great. They bring a warmth.
She's anybody doesn't know, she's Crazy Eyes and Orange is the New Black.
Yeah,
she's also great, in completely different in this, but really, really good.
Yeah, she's also in one of our favorite shows from this year that is not getting renewed. The, what is it? The, not the palace, not the house. Good Lord, what is it called?
Where she's the detective.
That was the Residence.
Yeah, The Residence. It's such a bummer that she's so fun in that. So
yeah, she really is. But I also think because CN France worked with Mendelsohn on Beyond the Pines. You remember he plays the
I just got that Blu-ray, man. I gotta go back and fucking watch that movie. It's been so long since I watched it.
Just be prepared to be upset.
I can still remember sitting in that theater. I like watching it. I think I was one of like maybe three people there and like wrestling with that movie where it's like, this is brilliant, but also it's pissing me off. And like just this, and this movie kind of does the same thing. It didn't piss me off, but wrestling with this like generational kind of thing. But this isn't like Place Beyond the Pines has a lot of like generational trauma, like shit passed on to you from your parents, you know? Yeah. Like a lot of that is in that movie. And this is kind of similar, but it's more about the, I don't think it's out and out coming saying like, hey, these people served their country and then they came back and this is the life that they kind of had to carve out for themselves. And, you know, how much that sucks. It doesn't out and out like come out and say stuff like that, but it kind of is making that point.
Like, oh yeah. The whole conversation that they have while he's filling up the pool.
Yeah. Where,
like he's like, he's like the country like that I served basically gave me all these keys. Like I have superpowers, but I can't use them for anything.
You can't use them in this day-to-day life.
Yep.
You know, and that's, you know, Lakeith Stanfield's character's same way. Like he's able to do these things, but there is no like, he can go work as a clerk somewhere, but it's just like, okay, man, like that's not the life I want to carve out for myself. And the only way to really do that, you know, especially you come back, you know, in Channing Tatum's character's case, your wife has moved on with somebody, your kid has another parent, more or less, and you're just like, I don't know what to do because I can't provide for my family. What do I do? And you just fall into all of this other stuff. I mean, he takes to, because it's based on a true story, he takes to robbing these McDonald's and Burger King, whatever. And by all accounts, every person that had an interaction with him is like, he's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
He's a really nice guy. Like he was, he didn't threaten us. He didn't, like, there was no, like, other than he had a gun, there was no real concern for, like, I'm going to die, you know? And they even show a lot of that stuff at the end of the movie.
Yeah, and the real-life footage, like, the documentary footage, which is great. Like, I love that, like, I love when movies do that. It's a very, like, the thing that also we haven't talked about is how much this feels like a film. This is a film. This isn't shot on digital, like movie, like streaming thing. This feels like this could have been released in 1998. Like that's how like real of a film this is. And it does that thing of film that films used to do when they were based on true stories, is that they showed you the characters and then they showed you news footage of the real life events that happened. And it's just like, it has this humanity that I wasn't expecting. Because you don't get this kind of humanity. It's messy humanity. It's not like this clean, like this clean version of humanity that we get from like crowd pleasers. Like this is a truly earned crowd pleaser, right? Like it doesn't give you easy answers. It still manages to leave the theater with a smile on your face, but it's kind of a melancholy one. Like, and I think it's also because what you find out after, like when they give the post, like before the video footage, but the titles that come up, is that you find out, like what you find out about him and his post life and how many times he tried to escape. It's kind of like, it's like that, huh? And you kind of smile and you go, this is an irascible son of a bitch that will continue to be an irascible son of a bitch as long as he lives, in the best way possible. You know, it's kind of like, it's, I miss this kind of film. And we used to get this film a lot during award seasons.
Yeah.
Like,
I thought this movie, like seeing the trailers, I was like, oh, this is the opposite of all the other award bait stuff that was getting like thrown at me.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, the trailers make it seem like, oh, this is a guy who kind of is being critically acclaimed making something different. And it is, but it's also still Derek C. and France making the kind of movies that he makes. And so it completely worked on me. I don't know if this will wind up being like one of the best movies I've seen this year.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly will wind up being one of the movies like I continue to think about, much like Place Beyond the Pines, which also I don't remember if, I don't think that got a lot of awards love.
That maybe got some nominations. No, not even awards nominations. Like,
okay.
Like, well,
that's bullshit.
Yeah, no, it is. And if you guys like, if you guys like, I would stay away from Blue Valentine because that's a horror movie. Blue
Valentine's rough, man.
That is a fucking horror movie.
Blue Valentine felt like Derek C. and France watched The Notebook and was like, that's bullshit. Watch this.
Yeah. Hold my beer, motherfuckers. But
this is what it's really like when you're in that kind of fucking toxic relationship. And I'm going to take one of the people that did it and do it with him.
Exactly. Also, like, Place Beyond the Pines, I feel it, like, is so a movie that is about 15 years ahead of its time, because you watch this movie now, and it brings up so many goddamn things from
I finally got around to listening to the Midnight Boys talk about One Battle After Another.
Yeah.
Like, it made me so happy that somewhere in that conversation, because a Van from that podcast, he was not the biggest fan of One Battle After Another either. Although he did still admit it was a good movie. But at some point in the conversation, he does say, like, guys, I think Place Beyond the Pines did what this movie's trying to do a lot better. And I was like, fucking yes! Yes, that's what I'm talking about. But yeah, I've got to go back and rewatch it. I've just not been in, I don't think I'm in the right mindset for it.
No, so. you're like, trust me, like, I keep on wanting to go back to it, but I keep on going, yeah, I don't think I'm ready for this yet. Because that middle section is so fucking hard for me to watch.
Oh, yeah, it's rough, man.
Like, there's a reason why I'm not, like every time, like, I feel like, I know this is going to sound weird, but I feel like every time I watch Bradley Cooper in a movie, he's a fucking fraud, because I really think that he is a bully, a fucking jock. He's the guy from Wedding Crashers, right? And so whenever I see him in something like, what's that fucking movie that he did with Gaga? Stars Born. I'm like, bullshit. But then when I see him in something like Place Beyond the Pines, he is so fucking good, it's scary to me. And
it's got an incredible cast, man.
Yeah.
I mean, Gosling, Eva Mendes, maybe the best performance she's ever given.
Yep. The last great Ray Liotta performance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mahershala Ali is great in that. Dane DeHaan. People who don't like Dane DeHaan, just watch this movie.
And, yeah, Rose Byrne, Bruce Greenwood, like, it has such a fucking incredible cast, and for that movie to have not, like, I don't know, like I say, I still remember, like, sitting there watching that movie and wrestling with the shit it has to say.
I literally halfway through the movie, when they do what they do, I literally wanted to get up and leave. I was so just fucking like upset. Like, that's the thing. It's an upsetting movie, but it's not for the reasons you think it's going to be upsetting. Though I don't know, like, you can kind of like, I think that the tension of the first part of the movie is all about, like, you know, like, I think that he's starting to build this repertoire of crime doesn't pay, and eventually you are going to pay for your crimes. Yeah. Because that, like, that's that is like literally Roof Man and Place Beyond the Pines are literally fuck around and find out. Like, they're literally fuck around, find out the movies. But it's that tension, because most of the time you're used to like Michael Mann movies where criminals are adept at what they do and how they're going to get away, and there's going to be some kind of exit, and then that the cops are going to do something right, and it just doesn't work like that in this movie.
Yeah. So in a weird way, I said Blue Valentine was like Derek C. and France watched The Notebook and was like, yeah, no, that's not how I feel. Like, Place Beyond the Pines is kind of like Derek C. and France watched The Departed and was like, no. this is what that this is how it really affects your life. I don't know what Roof Man is a response to, but yeah, it's those. I mean, if those are the only, they're barely most of his, like, because he's only made five or six movies. Yeah. I've never seen his first movie. I don't even know if you can find his first movie.
I don't think you can. Like, it's like one of those, like,
it's like Hard Eight, where it's, yeah, like, you just can't fucking find it. So
yeah, exactly. But like, he makes a movie once every 5 years, if we're lucky. If we're lucky, we get something every 5 years. And but like, here it's like, you almost hope that he doesn't, like, it reminds you, oh, like, let's not have him wait another 5 years to make another movie, because it's, yeah, so good. No one's seeing it, man. Like, that's the crazy part is that,
oh yeah, it's a damn shame. Like, it's with all the talk of like One Battle After Another, what's some of the other big, like, kind of award bait movies that people won't shut the fuck up about
this year?
One Battle After Another,
Sinners.
Yeah, I mean, I get Sinners though.
Yeah. Smashing
Weapons.
Yeah. Let me see what else. I'm trying to think of what else what else is there that this year just people have gone gaga over.
What's the other one that we disagreed on with the Pretty Boy?
Caught Stealing?
Yeah, Caught Stealing. Like, I think this is a much better movie than that.
Yeah.
So that's also a director that people like glom onto him, like, oh, this guy makes incredible films. It's like, yeah, I didn't think Caught Stealing was that good.
So. I will say, like, for me, because it's kind of like, it's not similar, but it's like, and this is not a knock at this movie, but Life of Chuck versus Roof Man, I'm taking Roof Man. Like, I am, because it's just, I don't know, it's a little bit more complex of a movie.
I agree that it's more complex. I completely agree, because it's subtle in the things it's trying to say. Life of Chuck is not really a subtle movie.
No, it's not. It's definitely not. But that, or I mean, Mickey 17, that was a huge movie that everybody talked about. I would say, yep, Roof Man.
Unfortunately, that came out in February, and yep, it's, by the time we get to actual Oscar noms, I doubt that's going to be in anybody's conversation.
Oh, Eddington. Eddington. Everybody talked about Eddington for, yeah, a long time.
I didn't see Eddington yet. But it kind of does the same thing One Battle After Another does.
It kind of does. But it, like, I feel like it does it in a very mean-spirited way.
Yeah.
Like it's a very mean-spirited movie. But again, like, it's a wonderful film. Like, and it truly earns its, like, it earns everything that it does. And it's been a long time since I've seen a movie that, like, is low stakes, like it's not about like it's nothing huge.
You're talking about Roof Man?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, I agree with you. Like low stakes in that, like this is not world saving or no. even like I mean it's earth shattering for like the people involved.
Yeah.
Specifically him and maybe his daughter. But it's so personal that like it really, really pulls you in, and it doesn't use like there's chase scenes in this movie, but it doesn't do like, oh, we're going to make a chase scene. It's just like, oh, he's running from the cops.
Yep.
You know, whereas like something like Caught Stealing or One Battle After Another, it's like, oh, we got to make this a chase scene.
Yeah.
And we got to do something with it. And this is more about the actual personal, like how it affects you, like how trauma affects everybody, mm-hmm. and dealing with that and examining that and like just sitting with it. And it's not a perfect movie, but it's just the kind of thing, like you said, we don't really get anymore because everything's got to be a spectacle, and there's no fucking spectacle in this movie.
No, none. Like the special effects in this movie are human interactions, which
yeah.
like, you know, like the best scene in the movie is like the best moment, the standout moment, the set piece is him going on the ladies' nights, the singles dinner, and yeah. him just being as charming as humanly possible to these women. It not just to Kristen Dunst, but to all of the women that are at that table. It's kind of like it's a movie. Like it's shot on 35. It looks like a movie. Like it doesn't feel like something I could see on streaming. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like there's something about it that it feels, and I hate using this word because I don't think it's old fashioned, but it's old fashioned. Like there's something, yeah. like there's something entirely different about it. It's not something that you see every day. And,
yeah.
but this was also something that we saw every day in the 90s. Like this could be released the same weekend as The Full Monty, and they both would have done well, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like it's that kind of humanity that like in film, shabby film that it is. And I'm like, man, I really do miss shot on 35 films.
Yeah. And just, man, the thoughtfulness of the movie, the like, almost, it goes, like I said, goes out of his way to not be a spectacle. Like the one, like, big car scene is just him test driving a car and, like, getting a little too wild with it, you know? And, yeah. like, that's the big, like, oh, shit. You know, we gotta make sure this is done right just because of, you know, the way filming the car, like going 80 miles an hour.
Exactly. So,
you know, none of the robbery scenes are big. It's very, very casual. It's just the kind of filmmaking you don't see anymore from even people who make, you know, capital F films.
Yep.
You know, because everything has to have a little bit of that spectacle in it. Yeah. It'll probably be in my top five of the year. I think I only gave it like a 3.5 on Letterboxd, mm-hmm. but it's one of those where it's like, I'm going to revisit this and be like, ah, this is probably 4, 4.5. So,
yeah. No, I can totally see that. And like I feel like this is a movie that's going to replay over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Like and it's gonna be one of those movies like Place Beyond the Pines where in 10 years people are gonna be talking about it like, so did this get like nominated for best screenplay? And they're like, no, nothing at all. Not at all.
Unlike Place Beyond the Pines, I do think this, even though it does have that sad ending, I do think this will be a movie that you can, if it's streaming somewhere, you can press play on and hang out with.
Yeah.
And not feel like the ending's a bummer. But for the most part, like even the like downturn stuff, like and I'll end on this. One of the things I love most about this movie, and you know, I don't know the whole real story, just only what, you know, I've read and seen here. Mm-hmm. Don't know if the guy was really like this. Seems like he was, but this is a movie about a dude with a lot of demons.
Yeah.
That he's wrestling with. And for the most part, even though his life is not going the way he wants it to, he's winning. Like,
yeah,
the shit is not getting him down. Occasionally, it does. Okay, like you can see hints of, like, especially the when he test drives that car, like a switch flips and he's reckless. He doesn't care about anything except like the thrill of something. And but like 10 seconds later, he's confronted with that, and instead of doubling down and like, oh, you're acting ridiculous, like he very much like owns, like, yeah, that was dumb, that was me being reckless, I shouldn't have done that. It's shit like that, and it's, yeah, like you don't see that in movies, man. Like in a lot of other movies, Kirsten Dunst's character in that scene would have been made out to be the bad guy.
Exactly.
And instead, it's just like, no, there's no bad guys. This one guy did something stupid with a bunch of other people in the car. He got called on it. Instead of, you know, getting indignant about it, he's just like, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like he apologizes. And, I mean, yeah, even at the end, he knows.
Little shit like that, man.
Yeah. Like, even at the end, he knows that he can get away. He can get away.
Yeah.
And he chooses not to. Like, he chooses not to run. He chooses not to make everybody's life terrible. And it's like it, you're right. It's not, it's a happy sad. It's a sweet with the sour. It's sweet and sour, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's that whole thing of like, it's a very 2025 notion of like, even if the, like, don't let the bad stuff get you down. Like, yeah, you know, which is really hard. It's really hard. And it's like the same thing. It's like finding the small things, because like what this movie is about is the small corners of things, right?
Yeah. Even when it gets him down, it's like not taking that out on, not passing that along.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I don't know. Derek C. and Friends, man. Like, just, God, what, he's incredible. Doesn't work enough.
No.
Like, I don't know if it's because he doesn't want to, or if just it's always trouble getting financed or whatever. This dude, I would watch something from this dude every other year. Like, if we could get a movie every other year, and he'd be that prolific. But instead, he's been directing since the, like, 98, and we've gotten 5 movies and a TV show. So, all right. So, yeah, next week, hopefully, we're going to really, really dive into The Black Phone. I may have seen Deliver Me from Nowhere by the time we talk next week. I don't know yet.
you mean Dewey Cox, the Bruce Springsteen story? Oh, man. Like, can we
just, I hope it's good.
I hope so, too.
I don't think the trailers are very good.
No, like, you know what it is? It's Jeremy Strong. Like, it's, yeah, Jeremy Strong going, he gonna narration, fix the world. Man. He gonna fix the world.
It's so fucking self-important.
Yeah. And as soon as he said, he's a repair man. Fuck
it, you. It bums me out, man. Like, that, it's such a self-important thing. And I'm like, you're not selling me on the movie. You're actually actively not selling me. Like, you're making me not want to watch this movie, but I do still want to see it, because I want to see how he does. You know, this is his first big film thing, and
I want to
see how he does. So I may have seen that by the time we record, who knows. So,
yeah, I know that my wife doesn't want to see it, so it's going to be easier for me to see that one. I mean, like, literally, like, what person, like I'm going to say this in, like, you know, all apologies to all the Springsteen fans out there, but literally, what person over the age of 40 wants to see a fucking movie about Bruce Springsteen?
Yeah.
I mean, so much so that, so, like.
Especially when you sell it to him like that, man.
Yeah, he's a repair man, and he's going to fix the world. Fuck you. Seriously? That fucking white man has not fixed anything. Did he run for president? No.
I was actually going to say, not only just over 30, what person who isn't fucking white wants to be told something like that?
Yeah. Like, seriously. Like, I'm like,
I cannot imagine being in any kind of, like, anything other than the like southern white dude I am watching that and just being, I would roll my eyes. Like, I am that guy and I roll my eyes hard at, but like, I cannot imagine being a 30-year-old black dude watching this trailer and just being like, I'm sorry, what? We don't even live in the same fucking country, man.
Like, seriously. What are you
talking about?
Like, Wait. So you're talking about some sad white dude in New Jersey making fucking rock music and how he had a bad childhood where he's playing, like, it looks like he's just boxing with his dad. That's a fucking Thursday night for me, motherfucker. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Man.
It's just so self-important.
It is.
I hope it's good, though. I hope
it's good, too. But, you know, when like, you adding, like the whole thing is that this movie is supposed to be about the album before Born in the USA.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, like, that's what the book is about, right? But
and now, then they start adding that shit in the trailer, and I'm like,
yeah. Oh.
I thought this was not about that album. So, anyway, yeah. So hopefully Black Phone, maybe a little bit of that next week. Okay. Until then, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieL.com, where I've got a ton of 4K and Blu-ray content. I just reviewed the 5-hour Scorsese documentary, which we did not talk about here. Actually, if you're a film fan or you even have a passing love for Mr. Scorsese, I would highly recommend this. This is a very entertaining.
Five parts. It's just, I was like, oh, a Scorsese documentary. Oh, a 5-hour Scorsese documentary.
But it doesn't feel like 5 hours. And there's, like, speaking of white dudes and white music, like, there's a lot of Rolling Stones in it. So it gives it this energy like a Scorsese, like, film. So, like, I really enjoyed the hell out of it. I've got a bunch of other stuff coming up. Like, it's spooky season, so I've got a bunch of 4Ks that are, like, you know, horror adjacent that are being reviewed on the site. So go ahead
and I just got read the that. Halloween 4K collection for Resurrection, H2O, and Curse of Michael Myers.
Introducing massive, Paul Rudd.
Yeah, it's like every one of them is like 3 discs, so it's like a 9 disc set. It's
those are very nice sets. I really like those.
I thought I owned those movies and then I didn't, and then Prime Day happened and they were discounted, so I was like, well, shit, I don't have them, so here we go. Anyway, go check out all that, and we'll be back next week.
Yep, where I'll be watching Dewey Cox. And we'll be reviewing the same movie. I swear to God, it's going to be the same goddamn movie. Talk to you guys soon. Number 1 Star Wars, number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Kal-El, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together, do it with me now.